Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello everybody, it's Gary YouTube here from Cultaholic Wrestling, back once again to do some more Gary YouTubing, this time in the form of a tier list thing, here to discuss Shocking, all in capitals hopefully in the title because that's how YouTube works, Shocking AEW debuts. I'm joined once again by yet another Gary YouTube, this time who has the hat and the body and the soul of Jack from Cultaholic. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad. Gary, how are you?
Absolutely stunning. He said tantalising there. Don't know why I said tantalising. There we go. I just can't wait to get going. Sam, hit the intro. So just in case you haven't been here before, we have 20 debuts, 20 historical shocking debuts from the past in AEW. We're going to put them in several tiers, ranking from the best to lovely, 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 to all right, to just about bearable, to get in the bin. And we're kicking things off, Jack, with the reason we're here today, because the most recent Dynamite to the one we're sat here, the June the 4th, 2021 episode of Dynamite, we saw the debut of Andrade El Idolo.
That's right. That's how she said it.
Andrade El Idolo.
So are you immediately, are you immediately thinking one of the bottom two tiers for this one, unfortunately?
It was. It was shades of previous, because there was a period of time earlier on in AEW history where they just couldn't get a debut right. They just sort of threw them out there and just banked on a big pop, maybe. Or something. It was shades of this one again, just in case you haven't seen it at home. We had Mark Henry in the ring doing an interview segment to AEW, something that was supposed to happen at Double or Nothing 2021, apparently. I was reading on the old dirty sheets this week, but they had no time, so they moved it to the Dynamite after the pay-per-view. Vicky Guerrero interrupts that interview segment. She cuts a promo. She speaks some Spanish. Everyone in the arena has no idea what she's saying, because then Andrade walks out, and while the pop, it was like, do you remember from the podcast, the Bobby Lashley pop from after WrestleMania, whatever.
Whoa!
It was? It was a Bobby Lashley pop, but it was a bit of a mess, wasn't it?
It was a little bit. I think that, in a way, the fact that nobody quite got what she said helped, because then when he walked out, it was actually a big surprise. Whereas if she'd just gone, here's Andrade, it would have been a bit, that would have been the pop rather than him walking out. I don't know why they structured it that way in the first place, to be honest. Why couldn't he have been a big surprise?
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen an angle like set up there and then. But then again, on one hand, there's that. You want like a proper angle to set him off in a proper direction on AEW. On t'other hand, you have us sat here now going, what does it mean? What does Vicky Guerrero have in store for Andrade? Other than out in a stable with Nyla Rose, that makes us tune in next week to find out what's going on. I personally didn't like it, though. It just felt like an afterthought. A bit like, oh, he's here today, is he? Oh, we'll just do it tonight then.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely felt like that. And when it's like the biggest free agent at the minute, apart from Braun Strowman, probably, then it's like, it should be a bigger deal. So for me, it's definitely one of the bottom two. I just can't decide which one, because the pop was big. It was exciting when he did actually walk out.
I reckon the pop, the Bobby Lashley-esque pop, and the sort of questions that were unanswered saves it from the bin. I'll go just about bearable. I reckon it could have been a lot better than it was. What do you reckon?
I agree with that. I agree.
Moving on to Matthew James Cuthbert Hardy, who was a real victim of the sort of early pandemic era of AEW, because if there's one thing we learned from Matt Hardy's AEW debut, is that a crowd really did make the broken Matt Hardy gimmick.
Yeah, a lot as well, a lot. You could argue that maybe the pandemic would have helped with some of the supernatural elements. You know, the fact that there was no live crowd means you can do more magic. But, yeah, like the teleporting around. But then you pointed out once on the podcast that it, at one point he just changed between characters by just going like... Yeah, that was poor. That was really, really poor, that. What was his actual debut? What happened on his actual debut? I can't quite remember.
It was the segment where he was just like, he appeared at the top of the ramp. Chris Jericho was in the ring, wasn't he? It was this, they did it quite cleverly because it was the same night that Brody Lee debuted in AEW. And everyone was sort of speculating that Matt Hardy was going to be the exalted one in the Dark Order. That got revealed to be Brody Lee. And I think it was later on the night, I might be wrong here, that Matt Hardy appeared, because obviously just jumping around in the terraces at Daly's place.
That rings a bell. Oh, I don't know. You're right. The big talking point for me in that one is that it would have been a lot better with a full crowd there.
Yeah. I remember when it happened, like the day after making videos for this channel, that I was really happy with how the debut went. I think I'm right in saying that. It was a long, long time ago, especially in the pandemic era. But I'd say it's certainly a step up from Andrade's, because at least we had some substance to it. It wasn't just Matt Hardy walking out going, oh, I'm here. I'm the face of AEW, which is the promo that everybody cuts these days. It's either I'm the face of insert promotion here, or this is the insert era.
I definitely agree that it was better than Andrade's. He also confronted Jericho, who is one of the biggest stars in AEW, so it put him right. It immediately made him really important. And then was it because he was teaming up with the Elite in the stadium, the first Stadium Stampede? I'm tempted to go for either all right or lovely, lovely, lovely.
We'll go top of all right, because I reckon we have better ones to come.
Okay.
But the beauty of the tier list is, everybody, this isn't the final ranking. The final ranking happens right at the end, so we can move things around if we fancy. That's how it works. Okay. Next up, we have Jake Hager. We're going all the way back to the first ever episode of AEW Dynamite. We have a massive brawl at the end of the show where all kinds of people are attacking Cody and Dustin Rhodes. This, of course, was to set up the sort of first part of the Inner Circle. And then Cody's in there, Dustin's in there. It looks like Cody and Dustin sort of got the upper hand against Chris Jericho, and Sammy Guevara's out there. He kicked Cody in the nuts. Dustin then kicked Sammy in the nuts. It looks like Cody and Dustin are doing it for the Rhodes and all that stuff. The Factory, the Nightmare Family, all of that good there stuff. But then out comes Jake Hager, who I think ran through the crowd, which must have been some spectacle to behold, just the size of that man, just watching him run through a crowd of people. He just got in the ring, he delivered a couple of massive moves to Dustin and to Cody, and he just stood there with one hell of a look on his face, as if to say, my God, this is what a pop for me sounds like. It's been that bloody long. I'm confused at what's going on here.
It's been that long since Five Star Wrestling. I remember at the time being really excited for the first episode of Dynamite, thinking, right, they've had this good run of, obviously they had the few pay-per-views first, Double or Nothing was class, and then the other ones were all right, but they weren't, you got a sense that they need more regular content, knitting everything together. So the TV show came around at a perfect time. I was so excited for that first episode. The Sammy turn was great. And then when the big reveal was Hager, I remember being like, oh, I was really, really disappointed. And I was totally proven wrong, because I was worried that Hager was going to become like a big singles star, like winning belts and stuff. But I think they've used him perfectly as a henchman rather than as the focal point. So at the I don't know how to rank this then, because at the time I was like, oh, this is bad. This is a bad decision. But moving forwards, I was quickly proven very wrong.
I tell you, it is weird, isn't it? Because I was immediately thinking, oh my God, it's going to be like WWE Mark II here. They're just bringing in all the former WWE people. Because I thought that Jake Hager was a really weird one to kick off on the first ever Dynamite, just because he was so like woefully used for the final however many years it was of his WWE run. So having come in and beaten up Cody, who was obviously one of the faces of AEW, was a weird message to send off on the first Dynamite. But then you remember that Jake Hager is not only like 6'6", but he's also like an amateur wrestler. He's obviously a cage fighter. He's a big, strong boy. It's not really his fault the way he was booked in WWE, is it really? It's down to Vince McMahon sort of misusing this massive, hard man. When you think, I know he's got no charisma, but that's what makes him so fantastic, in my opinion.
They've used him far, far better. Yeah. I remember another factor that made me really disappointed was that this happened quite shortly, maybe a few months after the latest season finale of Lucha Underground, which turned out to be the last episode that we've ever seen, where Hager like took over the show and won the belt. It was just out of nowhere as well. And I was thinking, oh, is this his thing now? Is he just going to promotions and spoiling everything?
Yeah.
But no, but it all turned out really well, actually. So I don't think we can give it a bad ranking. I think they've proven that it was all right.
Lovely, 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 too high. It was a shock. It was the pop is amazing. It's more of a Brother Love-esque pop than a Bobby Lashley pop from the podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh man, I'm really struggling with this one because I don't know, because of the occasion, the first ever Dynamite and stuff. Maybe that pushes it in it lovely. Maybe.
Go on. We'll
live crowd helped as well.
It was a huge pop for Jake Hager, and he looked good as well. He delivered a massive move to Dustin Rhodes, which always looks impressive because Dustin is a really long man. So yeah, we'll put it in lovely again. Come to the end of the video, we might move it down. Who knows what might happen? Butcher, Bunny, and the Blade. This is what I was sort of speaking about earlier on, with sort of early on in AEW history, them getting a lot of sort of debuts wrong. No, I don't want to say wrong, just underwhelming. A bit of a mess, a bit of a hodgepodge.
Yeah, because early on, you were either going to get someone you knew from WWE or someone that some people would have known from the indies, but some people wouldn't have. Yeah, I mean, some of them were in Impact and everything, but it's not as if everyone was going to know who this was, but they presented as if everyone knew who it was.
Yeah.
And I feel like this might have been one of them.
That's what I was going to say, because obviously they attacked, the Butcher and the Bunny and Blade attacked Cody on an episode of Dynamite, and I don't know if Jim Ross was the reason this debut, for the viewer at home at least, went so weird, because he was sat there going, who are these people? What are their intentions? And then Excalibur just piped up saying, oh my God, it's the Butcher, the Bunny, and the Blade. Yeah. Everyone knows them. They live down the road. They go to the pub every Friday.
That's not even names they were using either. No. So it's not as if it was names that they'd started using in AEW, but Excalibur was pretending that they'd always...
Oh no, they were a tag team before. I've seen
it. Were they called the Butcher and the Blade? I know
the Butcher and the Blade,
Blade was Braxton Sutter in Impact and Pepper Potts elsewhere.
I think I don't quote me on this, everybody.
Wait, Pepper Potts? Have I got that horribly wrong? That sounds like a made up name. I'm gonna just Google that. But yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, they were a tag team before. I don't know if Bunny was involved, but certainly Butcher and Blade were a thing before AEW kicked off. There's an entrance video somewhere. I don't know if it's MLW. Don't quote me on that. But they were definitely a tag team somewhere else. But yeah, the commentary team and the sort of what who?
Pepper Potts. Pepper Potts is a character from the Marvel universe.
Wow.
Which I'm not even a big fan. I mean,
the Blade could be in the Marvel Universe if you wanted to.
It's a woman.
Oh, dear.
So I've just made a huge, huge error.
I don't know anything about Marvel. No. But there we go. Is it Jim Ross's fault? No, it was. Yeah, is it Jim Ross's fault? Because if the lead commentator doesn't know what's going on, how the hell are the fans at home supposed to know what's going on?
It's either Jim Ross or Excalibur's fault or the direction they were given. Yeah, I can't really work it out, but it wasn't a good one. It wasn't a strong one.
In kayfabe, I'd like to put the blame solely at Jim Ross's feet, because in kayfabe, he's the lead commentator. He's a broadcast journalist who should be doing the research before the shows of any surprises that might happen, like people coming up from under the ring.
Yeah. It's bottom. It's one of the bottom two again, isn't it?
Is it? It's worse than Andrade's, isn't it?
Yeah, probably.
Does that
just
mean
the lack of context?
It's bottom of just about bearable or in the bin. That's where we're going here.
I don't know. Are there worse ones down the line? Like, clearly worse ones.
Who knows? We'll go in the bin, just a conservative bin place. And who knows, it might get out of the bin but before the end of the video. But now we move on to Paul White. And I remember being sat in this very chair on the afternoon of February the 24th, when out of nowhere on the Twitter machine, it just got announced that Paul White had signed with AEW.
Yeah. So this one wasn't... They announced it ahead of time.
They did announce it ahead of time. Because this was in the world where at the time, apparently, according to the dirt sheets, which have been proven wrong with the Andrade debut in AEW, it was all about the Sting debut and how pissed off the network was at the sort of surprise aspect of the debut and not giving them the opportunity to promote the debut ahead of time to bring in more viewers. So apparently AEW were banned from making these big surprise debuts from here on out. But obviously Andrade's proved that to be a load of rubbish. But on February the 24th, on the Twitter machine, AEW announced the signing of Paul White after he was sent packing from Monday Night Raw by Randy Orton once again, who saw off Matt Hardy. He saw off John Moxley, I think, as well. What's that meme that goes around on the social media? Randy Orton sending off all the people to AEW.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
Also, at the time, AEW Dark Elevation is announced, but then Paul White appeared. I think this is what we're going to rank more in terms of his debut here. He appeared on the March 3rd episode of Dynamite. Big Dick Tony Schiavone's just on the stage. No BS appears on the Tron. I think it's the Dark Elevation theme that was playing, which is still his theme today, isn't it?
Nice. I like that. That's like when someone like Michael Cole has like the SmackDown music, for example. Like, yeah.
I think he's still got it today, but that's a shame. They need a theme for the Paul White, don't they? For the Paul White, what am I doing here?
They need to do just the Big Show, but instead of saying the Big, they need to just say it's Paul White.
It's Paul White.
I'm thinking just about bearable. Because there's no surprise element. They announced it ahead of time.
Yeah, the title of this video might not be shocking, AEW debuts.
Some of them were definitely shocking. Some of them were shocking.
Has it got nothing to do with Paul White saying things like, raise your hand if you saw this turn coming?
That depends on how you feel about AEW constantly taking shots at WWE.
Yeah.
I think sometimes it's all right, but they do it way too often.
Yeah. And obviously Paul White's debut was all to bring about a debut for another person that we'll talk about in just a second here, which Paul White claimed was coming this Sunday at Evolution. So he got that wrong as well. Maybe this one has to go down the bottom somewhere.
Oh, did he call it Evolution as well? He did, got it wrong.
Yeah,
that might even be bin worthy.
We'll put it in the bin. Why not?
Especially,
to be honest with you, I cringe when he put, raise your hand if you saw this turn coming. one too many shots from it. Again, I just think about the big golden ring, the big brass ring, the big golden ring. Because that's the saying, is everyone grabs the golden ring. There's too many shots, isn't there? But
I know, and as well, I still don't... This doesn't help his debut in hindsight. I still don't quite understand the point of Dark Elevation, because Dark should do the job of Dark Elevation.
Yeah.
Why do we need two Darks? But no.
Have you watched Dark Elevation?
I've seen clips.
I've not seen a second. I'm fully on the Dark train now.
Dark's great laugh, because everyone... Taz is brilliant on it, and everyone just has a bit of a laugh, yeah.
But I saw one clip. I think it might have been one of Max Caster's entrances from Dark Elevation, and... Paul White and Tony... it's Paul White and Excalibur today, I think. It started off with Tony. I think Tony got taken off. I hope I'm right there. I should really watch more Dark Elevation. But Tony and Excalibur try to do a knockoff Taz and Excalibur, and it's just not the same. It's just not the same.
The band are not there.
No, it's not there yet. But they are early on in their relationship. So obviously the debut that Paul White was brought in to hint at was the debut of Christian Cage, which didn't take place at WWE Evolution. It took place at AEW Revolution.
This one was Tony Khan's fault. Isn't Christian's fault. Yeah, this was Tony Khan's fault.
So we look at the clues. I've got a couple of clues written down here. We had, obviously, Tony Khan in the week leading up to Revolution was speaking in the media. He was speaking about the debut of a Hall of Fame caliber talent, one of Tony Khan's favourite wrestlers when he was growing up. Dream matches to be had here. But then he went too far. I forget what he said specifically, but he went too far because he allowed people to speculate, oh, my God, it's John Cena or Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, it's going to be a huge, huge star. Christian, like everyone... Wrestling fans of a certain age love Christian because he's part of our childhoods, and he was in a great tag team, and he's really criminally underrated. And everyone loved it when he finally won, you know, the big gold belt, and he really deserved it. Impact fans like him because he spent time there. But there's a way of hyping him up, and it's not by saying he's one of the biggest and best stars ever, because he's just not, unfortunately.
No, he's that next tier down, isn't he? We're going to put a tier list of big stars in the history of pro wrestling. But, he went too far. He allowed people to speculate wildly, which it's a weird thing to have a go at Tony Khan at. But then again, why open yourself up to that? Why not just stick to the clues that, you know, very much did apply to Christian?
He's guilty of doing that sometimes. He hyped up, was Moxley against Hager in the MD Arena match. Yeah, he said it's the best MD Arena match ever. And it was a good, it was fine, but it wasn't like Rock Mankind. It wasn't the best MD Arena match ever, it wasn't.
Yeah, and to be fair, since then he has really sort of toned it down in his hype for things. So
Toned it down.
Lovely pun.
Tony Khan it down.
Right, so to be honest with you, I saw a lot of people saying how disappointed they were, and it was just Christian being the one who debuted here. But I didn't get that. But yeah, when his impact, his TNA theme from back in the day, the knockoff version that we've got in AEW today, when that started playing, I was like, bloody hell, that's a good get, especially when you think about the Rumble, which took place not too far before Revolution did.
Yeah. It's a hard one to place. And then he came out and he said he's going to outwork everyone.
And then Darby Allin was like, right, I'll show you.
Yeah.
You'll see.
I really don't know this one, because there's nothing wrong with the debut itself, but it's all the background around it, which drags it down a little bit for me. What about All Right?
Well, go All Right, why the hell not? Put him next to Matt Hardy.
I'd say definitely behind Matt.
Yeah, definitely.
Towards the bottom of All Right.
It was weird. Yeah, it's just, again, we're going back to that period of time where apparently, according to the dirty sheets, AEW weren't allowed to do proper shocking debuts. This was under the guise of that, just to drum up interest for a pay-per-view, which you can see why they would do that, but again, there's nothing better than a big, proper shocking debut, is there?
I feel like this Christian one as well has been saved from a lower tier by the fact that straight after it, there was the Rubbish Explosion match.
So
everyone was talking about that.
Yeah.
So the Christian thing was kind of secondary news and people weren't as harsh about it.
Now, this one we're about to speak about now is incredibly weird to look back on. I watched it in full last night and I could not believe how times have changed so drastically. We're going all the way back to Double or Nothing 2019, a show that we were at live. Jack, that was lovely, wasn't it?
It was a very good show. It was a very good show. But there was a couple. Which debut are you talking about here? Because I think there was a few.
The Dark Order.
Oh, not the good, right, okay.
No, not the good ones.
I'll do a reenaction of our reaction at the time, right? So it's like, oh, the lights have gone down. Who were they there? And that was pretty much, that was pretty much it,
just the
intensity of the reaction in the crowd.
To set the scene for everybody at home, we have the Dark Order, who back then, they were not the lovable goofballs that we see today on AEW and on Being the Elite and shows like that. They were dark, spooky perverts, and Evil Uno had his throne of gimps that he would sit on and sort of like, I'd just act like, you know, he owned these men. I guess is what the vibe they were going for here in their gimp masks and whatnot. Dark Order, who was just stewing Evil Uno back then. They attacked
Stew Gray. It's such a good name.
Evil Uno and Stew. Yeah. The Dark Order. They attacked TH2 and Best Friends, and it wasn't received well in the arena whatsoever. I'm sure there was chance of like, who are you? What is this? What the hell's going on here?
Yeah. Because they were a sort of semi-beloved. I mean, they were beloved, but on a smaller level on the indies when they were the player Uno and played like the computer game characters gimmick. But they looked very different. Stu Grayson's obviously now not got a mask on. Uno probably looks the same, but evil. But yeah, live, no one knew who they were. We didn't have the benefit of commentary.
No.
So that's a point, I suppose.
I mean, would they have known?
Yeah, true. JR wouldn't have known.
I didn't take note of what the commentators actually said while this was going on. But I can't remember from watching the video last night. But yes, it wasn't a very good debut, was it?
No, it wasn't a very good debut.
It was just
I'm glad they've turned it around.
Oh, yeah. That's one thing that AEW does fantastically well. When they see that something isn't working, they're not scared to just go, see you later. Yeah. Let's change things up to make things better. That's one thing they do very well, is listen to the fans.
And was this... No, this would have been before. Do you remember when there were like three spooky stables at the same time?
So you had the Dark Order, you had the Nightmare Collective.
Butcher and the Blade and the Bunny. They were on their own, But the Dark Order must have been the first ones.
Yeah, they were. That was Double or Nothing 2019.
That's all right.
So there we go. Where did we put that one? They just attacked them. Then Evil Uno made his throne of spooky his gimps, and then they went away. That was basically the debut.
Unfortunately for me, it's got to be Bin just because of the sheer confusion there live. Everyone was just like, what?
It was the sort of vibe of the thing as well, because I remember coming away from that especially thinking AEW was marketing themselves this alternative to WWE, yet that Dark Order debut couldn't have been more WWE if it tried for me.
Yeah, that's very true.
So just setting itself apart, I guess that's what held that one back. And I think it's deserved for the Bin. Dark Order today are way better than Dark Order from way back then. Now we go on to Brody Lee, naturally from the Dark Order here, who debuted on March the 18th, 2020. That was the debut, of course, of Matt Hardy as well. This show was supposed to be before the pandemic, obviously, in his hometown of Rochester, New York.
That would have been so good.
Would have been amazing, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yep, so of course we spoke about earlier on how smart AEW were to sort of throw a bit of a swerve in there, everyone expecting Matt Hardy to be the leader, the Exalted One, sorry, of the Dark Order, but nope, it turned out to be Brody Lee instead. We had heel Evil Uno, who was sort of still in his spooky pervert phase, but without his throne of gimps at this period of time. He was speaking about this the promo in a heelish way, speaking about the Exalted One is coming, the Exalted One is coming, the Exalted One is coming. He kept on repeating. SCU, Frankie Kazarian and Christopher Daniels then cut him off. Daniels said he's sick of Uno talking, and he's sick of Uno saying there's an Exalted One because there isn't. And then we get the vignette play, cutting off Daniels, where we have that iconic shot of Brody Lee with the swinging light bulb and walking down the corridor and whatnot. Wapping off his big white hood, and then cuts a lovely promo there where he speaks about Christopher Daniels not being the first out-of-touch old man not to believe in him.
It's one of the top two tiers. I think it's a good one. It's definitely a good one. Did he appear in the arena then?
He did, because after the vignette aired on the big Tron, he was in the ring behind SCU.
Ah, yes.
He then went to hit his sister Abigail and then went, oh no, we'll pull a fakie here, as we would call it up here in the Northeast. Then he just hit a massive discus clothesline on Christopher Daniels.
I think it might even be top tier for me.
I'll go top tier, because I remember that it was just the shock of it all. Because when the vignette's playing, it's sort of the distorted, like, I don't know what effect to put on it. Sam will know. Put up a thing on the screen, Sam. That's what they did to his voice. It starts off with that, and then just sort of halfway through the promo, it changes to Brody Lee's voice. But obviously, being fans of WWE and not really knowing him before WWE, I had no idea what he sounded like. So when he then walks down the corridor and takes off his hood, he's like, oh my God, it's him. That's what he sounds like.
Yeah, yeah. It's top tier for me.
Well,
yeah.
Let's put him in there. Next up, we have the Good Brothers, who were the first shocking debut, I do believe, of 2021. It was New Year's Smash Night 1. Remember that, right at the start of the year?
Oh, yes. It feels like so long ago.
25 years ago. Of course, this was, the real sort of moving up through the gears of the cross-promotion with Impact Wrestling. Good Brothers at the time were the Impact Wrestling Tag Team Champions. They helped Kenny Omega attack John Moxley. It was a shock. We had Bullet Club feels and all that stuff with the books. Then later on, coming in the ring and everyone raising their hands and doing that their hand sign. Don Callis wetting his pants at the sight of that hand sign being made with all the people involved. I thought this was really, it was like a prop, it felt, I don't want to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. It felt like it was back in the 90s with this sort of debut.
Yeah, yeah. And was this before or after Gallows just became so orange and oily?
I think the orange came after the debut in AEW, because they sort of hyped what ramped up the silly clothes, didn't they? And the sort of... what's the word I'm looking for? The
carny clothes.
The carniness, yeah. The fake
dressing
carny.
Like wrestlers. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Basically pretending to be Nash and Hall.
Yeah.
This is what they're doing. I'd go second top tier only because it was good and it did work, but only because I've seen the Bullet Club or variations of the Bullet Club or the Elite or whatever do this quite a few times. So the shock wasn't as big as it could have been, but it was still good, I think. Still good enough for second top tier, definitely.
And you were thinking at the time when they debuted, you're thinking, oh my God, all the matches they could have with people from Impact Wrestling.
Yeah.
That hasn't happened, has it? We've had Rich, who have we had? We had Rich Swann.
Rich Swann.
Kenny went to Impact, didn't he?
Was Sammy Guevara was meant to, and then stuff apparently happened in Impact and he came back. There was teasing, I think. Teasing, I've said it weirdly there, of the Motor City Machine Guns.
Mm-hmm.
But that never panned out either. So.
Yeah, it hasn't been what it could have been, which is a bit of a shame. But there we go. Next up, we have one of the more infamous debuts in AEW history. We have the debut of Matt Sydal in the All Out Casino Battle Royal. Of course, it's remembered for one reason and one reason alone. Michael Nakazawa was in the ring beforehand, oiling himself up, and in turn, the turnbuckle that Matt Sydal had planned to hit a really dangerous wrestling move off of. So, of course, after the oil was on there, Matt Sydal goes up to the top rope. It's very smoky as well. I didn't realise how much smoke there was from his entrance as well, so that can't have helped things, I guess. He goes to do it, he slips, he falls, and then, oh my God, you're fearing the worst, but obviously Powerhouse Hobbs was on the scene, making sure he's okay, cradling his head and all that stuff. So that was okay. Eventually, Sydal was eliminated from the match by Eddie Kingston, but to be honest with you, because the way wrestling fans are and the way professional wrestling works, whatever happened after that slip did not matter in the slightest.
I'm just glad he wasn't booked to win.
Yeah.
It's got to be Ben Ross. It's arguably the worst one yet. Unfortunately for him, because it was an accident and everything, it was just a botch. But and he could have got a lot worse, you know. He's probably just relieved that he didn't break his neck.
Yeah. Well, I think everybody is, isn't he?
Yeah, but it has been worthy.
And you look at what happened, I know it's really got nothing to do with this tier list, but what happened after the debut, I don't know if that incident and how sort of infamous it became, I guess, hampered how he was being booked in AEW.
Maybe so.
Yeah, because he just went missing. He went off the face of the earth, just appeared on Dark. And you were thinking, oh, the big surprise in the Casino Battle Royal, maybe he'd have bigger plans for someone in that spot.
Maybe. Now he's got his brother. Now he's a tag team, so... He had a couple of good singles matches with... Did he have one with Kenny Omega, maybe?
Yes.
He's had a couple, but he hasn't... He definitely hasn't been, like, a feature part of Dynamite, no.
No. Next up, we're going back to Double or Nothing 2019 once again, and I think we're right in saying this is the first ever big shock and surprise in AEW history, because this is Awesome Kong. Do you remember this one?
Oh, yes! I forgot about that. In my mind, there were two shocking debuts at Double or Nothing, but no. There's Awesome Kong as well. This was class. This was what it was before the women's... Was there a triple threat match at first, and then Brandy made it a four-way?
Yeah, Brandy comes out and says she wants to make this match awesome.
Awesome.
I was thinking, the Miz is coming out here. Oh, my God, what's going on? But no, Awesome Kong comes out. And I tell you what, being there live in the arena for that show, the pop was deafening.
That was a great one, yeah. And the match was booked around her being really scary and strong as well. And Brandy was being like a supervillain. When she shouted, I want to make it awesome, and then Awesome Kong came out, I remember Brandy going like, ha, 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 like both hands in the air. Yeah. It was class. I think it's a top tier for me.
I'll go definitely top tier. It's so strict. I don't know what the... Do you know the reasons are for Awesome Kong sort of not being around? I know she was shooting another season of Glow.
That got cancelled, did it, because of the pandemic, maybe?
Did it?
The shooting, maybe. I might have mixed that up, but yeah, I don't really know.
Yeah.
Maybe she's getting a bit sick of it. I think she's in her 40s now, maybe. Mm. I don't know.
It would have been nice to have seen her do more in AEW, because then, of course, coming out of that, we had her appear, I forget which pay-per-view it was, but I think it was on the buy-in for a pay-per-view where she appeared with the knife. And I was thinking, oh my God, she's going to stab somebody. But nah, she cut off someone's hair. The Nightmare Collective was sort
What's happened to Mel?
Mel, yeah. Mel's,
remember Mel from the Nightmare?
Mel wrestled a few times last year, didn't she? I remember her name cropping up in a tier list we did for the AEW Mel. Roster. And yeah, she's sort of gone missing, I think. But it's a shame to see what's happened with Awesome Kong. But then again, we don't know the full story. So maybe she doesn't want to be involved. Yeah. And if she doesn't, all the more power to her. Why should wrestling run her life?
And bring back Mel also.
Yes. Now we're moving on to Miro, who debuted in AEW as Kip Sabian's best man, which is a good name to have, or nickname to have, because it's...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's got two meanings. First of all, of course, is the best man in terms of weddings and stag do's and whatnot. But then again, when he turns on Kip and becomes serious, he is the best man because he is hard and cool too.
This one was a really weird feeling because Kip did the whole... There was like the comedy thing first, wasn't there? Where like two people came out and Kip was like, not you, you silly Billy, get to the back. And then he went, here's the real one. And I was thinking, well, this is going to be like a mid-card guy. And then I was like, what? It was totally shocking when it was Miro, but maybe not necessarily in a good way. Because obviously Miro's whole first, up until really recently, his run in AEW has been criticized for having him just way too low down on the card. And this sort of set the tone for that straight away.
Was it you on the podcast saying it was deliberate, maybe?
Yeah, but I look now and I'm not entirely sure. But it came around the same sort of time that like, Lance Archer and Brody Lee were being built up straight away and then losing to Moxley. And then I was thinking, if they throw Miro in and have him lose to Moxley straight away, then what's the point? But since then, I'm really not sure because it went on for a lot longer than I thought.
I think what you were saying there makes sense because, so many people got fed to Moxley. Well, not so many people, but a few debuts got fed straight away to John Moxley early on and had sort of had their, not credibility, but, you know, the sort of steam quashed a bit by John Moxley beating them. But Miro looked fantastic on his debut.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was wearing all kinds of gucky stuff, but not shoving it down our throats like the young cooks do. We had a $650 Disney Times gucky, a shirt that cost $650. He had Disney Times Gucci jogging pant, which I would like you to guess how much. Do you remember the sort of Zubar-esque pants he had on were? Guess how much they were.
I'm guessing. I'm going to guess... $1,200.
Oh my, would you actually think that?
I don't know, why is that right?
It's $1,450, but I thought they looked a lot cheaper, to be honest with you.
Oh no, I was just like I doubled my real get just because I knew that it was going to be outrageous. Yeah, but Gucci. I'm surprised I got so close.
Then he rounds off the look with some Adidas Yeezy Boost 350 V2 Earth.
No idea how expensive they would be.
$220, so quite cheap.
Yeah, cheap as chips.
But obviously, the debut was... It was weird because you think, well, then again, because I remember Rusev from back in WWE being held back by from being this sort of endearing, lovable, funny man who could also kick your head off. So I was thinking, well, maybe they're going to show or allow Rusev to, or Miro, sorry, to show his proper, like, his chops as a sort of comedic, nice, lovely wrestler.
Yeah, maybe. It was full of ups and downs for me generally. Like, the wedding stuff I was really disappointed by.
Yeah.
But then it all ended pretty well with the arcade. The Arcade Anarchy match. That was really, really good. The debut for me just felt weird. I should mention, by the way, that Kip, one of the lads that Kip brings out who thinks they're the best man when they're not, is a man called Puff. I think it's P-U-F. And he once popped into one of our streams on Twitch.
Wow.
He seemed like a lovely bloke. Yeah. I was like, is that Puff from AEW? And then he commented saying, yes, it is. Now, he might have just been someone making it up, but I believed him. I think it was actually him. I think he might have had a verified. I'm not sure.
Wow, what a story.
It's because I've got no idea where to put this debut.
Yeah, I'll go all right.
You okay? Right, okay.
Bottom of all right, just about bearable sort of.
Okay.
Because, yeah, I was full of hope for the debut itself, but obviously after that, which we're not here to speak about the day, but after that it was rubbish. But the debut, I guess, was fine. A fine start for Miro and AEW, which has got a lot better as we're sat here today. Next up, we're moving on to Santana and Ortiz, who debuted at All Out 2019 just after a match where Pentagon and Phoenix retained their AAA tag team title against the Young Bucks in that their ladder match. I say that their ladder match. I feel like I've seen about 25 ladder matches between the Bucks and Lucha Bros and AEW alone. I don't know if you get that feeling as well.
I do. There was one the other week and I was like, another one, but it had actually been quite a long time. Mm. In fact, was it? No, it was Pender and Pac, wasn't
Pender
it?
Pender and Pac, yeah, Dynamite, yeah. But for this one, back at All Out 2019, Santana and Ortiz appeared to attack both teams, but they both had President masks on. One had JFK on, and the other had Billy Clinton.
Tell you what, when Santana and Ortiz, they don't do it too often, which is good, but when they decide to dress up, I think it works. They look really, really cool.
Yeah.
They look really badass.
Not like the Young Bucks, where they wear their little karate pajamas like they're 4 years old. What pay-per-view was that for? I know it was a gaming reference. I know it's lost on me.
It was Fyter Fest, probably.
Yeah, I know Kenny Omega was there with them. They had a trios match, didn't they?
They were all Street Fighter characters, but I only got... I mentioned this on a podcast, maybe. Maybe it was the one that you were off for recently, but we're talking about that. It would have been because Sam and Matthew know about the games, and Sam was on that podcast, and I was saying, I know the Young Bucks were Ryu and Ken, the two like main Street Fighter characters, right? But I was like, I don't know which one Omega was. Was he some like obscure character? Apparently not. Apparently he's like a well-famous character on the game as well. I'm just very crap at knowledge of... He was well-known. So, yeah.
Fair enough.
Anyway, sorry, Santana. Yeah, Santana.
The Young Bucks looked really cute in that match. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, they did.
They debuted and they attacked. That was it. That was the debut. Whapped out the album, whapped off the masks and... revealed it was them, and big pop once again because obviously they're working in Impact Wrestling with LAX and all that stuff. Built a very good reputation on the scene of professional wrestling. One of the straight hells that got away would have been with those two at that Wrestling Media Con back in 2018.
Oh, that would have been good.
Trevor Lee and those two, they were the ones that got away from me. Oh, gutted.
I'll tell you what, I was hyped for this because I felt like I was really indie and cool at the time because not long before on... Do you remember Progress used to go to America? They'd do like three shows in a row in America and then they'd come back. And it might have even been in England actually, but Santana Ortiz wrestled for them a few times. You know how Progress, like Jim Smallman would talk in between each and every match. So after the Santana Ortiz one, he called them back to the ring and they just lost or whatever. And he went, lads, that was one of the best tag team matches I've ever seen. And Santana Ortiz looked like really emotional and stuff. And I couldn't work out whether it was real or whether they were acting in kayfabe, because if I was a wrestler and then some British promoter called me back to the ring and went, you're really good, I'd have been like, I mean, I'm a wrestler, I'm really cool, you nerd, like, what are you on about? So I don't know. It's not me having to go to Jim Smallman, I'm just trying to get in their mindset at the time.
Yeah, who was that match against?
Might have been either Mustache Mountain or CCK or one of the Progress tag team.
I guess at that point in time, it might mean a lot for their career getting a good match against more established names. Is that fair to say, if it was Mustache Mountain?
I can't remember if it was before or after they'd been on Impact, though. So they might have been
more
having a good match.
Yeah.
Maybe they were realising that people in England knew who they were and that they were like international. It might have been part of that as well. Not really sure.
Around this, I don't know how much this hampered this AEW debut for you, though, but around this time it was being teased for an episode of Dynamite that Chris Jericho and two mystery partners would face Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks, of course. I don't know if that affects anything at all, does it?
I can't remember. I remember something about that announcement being off or making the result of the match obvious, like the Bucks were definitely going to win or whatever. Yeah. So... But I think the debut is probably second top tier.
Yeah,
lovely.
I'd agree with that, yeah. Especially when masks involved. When people take off masks, it's always it's like coming out of a box. Whoever said that famous quote back in the day, come out of a box, you're instantly over. That's how it goes, isn't it? Yeah.
Not all the time.
Yeah. Kenta, at the Beach Break special, you'll be able to speak more about this to me because I was just watching this debut when a hooded man attacked John Moxley out of nowhere, which, of course, set up their New Japan Strong match. I was thinking, wow, because all I really knew, because I'm going to sit here, fans, people who watch our stuff and tell
viewers,
people at home, I don't watch too much New Japan Pro Wrestling, so I wasn't too familiar with Kenta at all. So when I saw this Kenta rock up to AEW, I was thinking, wow, this Hideo Itami's got a bit serious, hasn't he? This is completely different vibe.
So Kenta, from what I understand, because I didn't know much about him. I'd heard the name because he was maybe one of the best wrestlers in the world, but before NXT, I didn't know much about him, but he was like really, really good and everything. Didn't work for New Japan, and in New Japan, if you work for one promotion, you often work for them just forever. That's just your promotion. Then he went NXT, and then when he debuted for New Japan, that seemed like the bigger shock almost. But then the AEW one, I don't think what happened itself, like the action itself with him and Moxley, wasn't like anything outrageous, was it? No. You just beat him up and hit him with the go to sleep.
It was more the fact that it was him.
The context of it and what it meant for this whole possible relationship between AEW and New Japan, which we still don't have a clue whether that's going ahead or not. But that makes it really exciting. So for me, it would either be lovely, lovely, or bottom of top tier.
Did Kenta not work for New Japan before NXT?
There might have been like a one-off or something, but it was when he got announced for the G1 1 year. Maybe on the same show as they announced Moxley for the G1, actually. And everyone just lost their minds.
Oh.
Everyone says, you know, that the stereotype, oh, Japanese crowds are quiet or whatever. When they brought Kenta out, they weren't quiet. They were like, whoa, what's he doing here?
That shows you just how much I know about
wrestling. I'm gonna check that while...
shows just how much I
just
know
so
about...
Just so I don't get slaughtered on that.
What, the pyro fans will be having a go at us now? I know it's
Kenta,
pyro. I know it's pyro people at
home. He knows... he wrestled for Noah.
Noah, that's the one.
He wrestled for Noah between like 2003 and 2011.
People at home are going to be throwing their popcorn at the screens and calling me a mug.
Oh, no, wait, longer than that. He wrestled for them all the way up until he went to NXT. And he would occasionally pop over and wrestle like Bryan Danielson at Ring of Honor and stuff.
Aye. Good for him. Lovely, lovely or top? That's where we're going, is it?
It's either top of lovely or bottom of top. And I'll go bottom of top.
Because of the forbidden door. And stuff like that, and the sort of context of it all.
Because if the forbidden door turns out to be nothing, then everybody who's watched this, please pretend that we put it the one below.
Oh yeah, because imagine if Nick Khan sweeps in there under Tony Khan.
I know, but I love watching Tony get really riled up by it.
I know. Well, he stands there with his, like pushing his muscles out.
I don't care. Do reckon, I'm a big,
reckon,
a big lad, mate.
He stands there all the time in front of the wrestlers, like just trying to fool them.
I've been in the gym.
Is that tricking it when you just go like, "Watch this, I've got no muscles," and then, but boom. Brian Cage, Double or Nothing 2020 Casino Ladder match. He won the bloody thing, challenged Moxie for the title later on down the line. I thought this debut was absolutely fantastic. He broke a ladder during his entrance. What a start that is to get off. You know, we had Kane back in the Attitude Era breaking a cage door, Brian Cage ripping a ladder apart again. Jim Ross didn't have a clue what was going on. He was sat there in commentary saying, what role does Taz have to do with this? Is he a friend? Is he a manager? Yeah. Is he whatever? That's just classic JR at this point.
Go on.
I've got a list of highlights from the match itself. We have thrown Darby into a ladder before an F10. An F10. to Darby as well. We had the old suplex from to Joey Janela from the outside of the ring into the ring on the second rope. We have climbing the ladder with Orange Cassidy on his back. We had the whole match sort of gang up on him and put him under a stack of ladders and chairs and tables and whatever. And Joey Janela did a Death Valley driver off the apron onto that pile of stuff with Brian Cage underneath. Yeah, he survived that. Where are we going? Where I've lost my notes here. Huge powerbomb Luchasaurus, where he literally threw Luchasaurus, who was not a small dinosaur. And then finally we had sort of the final bit in the match where he laid Darby Allin on top of a ladder, gorilla pressed the ladder out the ring and just sort of watched Darby fall to his death.
Yeah.
I just thought everything, just every sort of bit through that match, it just made a star straight away.
Was this not the match where he put him in a body bag and threw him over the top row?
I don't think, I was on Dynamite, wasn't it?
Oh, right, fair enough. Darby does some weird, he does some mad stuff.
Yeah,
I think this was perfectly booked to just show off how dangerous and cool Brian Cage is. Brian Cage, right, I bet he's what that sort, he's like the, you know how old school wrestlers always say, like, if you're a giant, just keep it simple. Don't do anything impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Just be slow and simple all the time. And then once in your career, you can do something impressive and everyone will go, wow. But Brian Cage, I bet they hate Brian Cage because he's huge and he can move like a cruiserweight.
It's weird because I remember Kevin Owens speaking about, because obviously Kevin Owens used to be really stick thin when he first started and could do all the flips and whatnot. And obviously when he rocked up with a bit of a gut on him and whatnot, and massive muscles, people were shocked at the stuff he could do. And he was like, well, I could do this stuff when I was thin. It doesn't mean I can't do it now that I'm a bit huskier. So maybe Brian Cage was a small lad back in the, well, comparatively to now, he was
a
small lad when he started as well, so maybe it's the same sort of thing. He just sort of kept the same style while adding all of the muscle.
I think it's top tier, probably, right?
Oh, straight to the top tier. I thought it was a class debut from start to finish. Hasn't really come to much since. I don't like the book of the team, Taz, me.
No, they're a bit weird, but I think if he does split off from them, he could be really good. He could be really good going after heels, and they'll be just terrified because it's Brian Cage coming after them.
I can spot a segue, because speaking of splitting off from Team Taz, as we're sat here today, recording this on the 10th of June, 2021. Okay. Ricky Starks, on last week's Dynamite, I think it was, we had the little promo backstage where Taz said it'll be Cage and whoever doing the wrestling, and Ricky Starks was like, oh, why is it not me? And then he walked off with a sulk on, remember that?
He's tension in the ranks.
There is tension, but 17th of June 2020, Nelly, yeah, bloody hell, episode of Dynamite, we had Ricky Starks answering the TNT title challenge of one Cody Rhodes. Obviously, Ricky Starks at this point in time would be making massive waves on NWA Power. Mm-hmm. He does this the vignette just before the match where it's more of a baby face sort of vibe, where he's speaking about working for years in the pro wrestling industry to get to where he is today. His theme is always a banger, which always makes a massive difference for me in terms of a debut. I love his theme, me.
Yeah, it's a good theme.
The Revolution is televised.
It's just a shame that when he comes out with Team Taz so often, they just come out with the Team Taz theme, but yeah.
Yeah, and the match itself obviously was a good one because, of course, it's Ricky Starks. He's good at doing the wrestling. And, of course, the decision to sign Ricky Starks to a full-time AEW contract was apparently made during that match itself, which speaks volumes as to how good that match was.
Yeah, I think... like the Kenta one, this was big, not because he did anything or he had a mask or he was like anything crazy happened, just because of the context. It made me think, wow, at Cody's open challenge, anyone can turn up. Mm. This is really good. So for me, it might even be another top tier. If not, one below.
I'll go one below, just compared to the ones in the top tier. I think it's a little step below, but not too far. But obviously, I can't wait for him to break away from Team Taz and do some stuff. He's got that charisma kid, hasn't he?
He's like a cruiserweight rock.
Yes, he looks a bit like him too.
Maybe that's why. Maybe because he has similar hair to The Rock in the 90s. Maybe that's where I've got that from.
27th of May 2020, episode of Dynamite, FTR make their AEW debut with the most shocking of debuts in the history of AEW Dynamite. The last place I expected FTR to do the wrestling was AEW, quite honestly. But they arrived in their old school car, which looked like it been made at Sin City Motors. You seen that on Dave? I love that show, mate. I love car building programs.
I've seen the trailer for it, but I've not actually watched it.
Dave always causing all sorts of havoc around the shop. Fantastic stuff. They arrived in their old car, of course, with their cool denim jackets are. And AEW pulled a kind of swerve because FTR, they saved the Young Bucks from a beating at the hands of Butcher and Blade. But of course, this was a ruse because they would then set off and have their rivalry, which the Bucks won, and that's a shame.
This feud tried to be way too clever for its own good. Like, oh, we're both heels, or now... it was like, we're going to both be respectful but try to outdo each other, then it was like, both no, heels. We're actually baddies. And the Bucks try to be heels, and that was bad. I think the debut would have been much better if they'd just come out and beat up the Young Bucks. They just needed to keep that one simple, that, really.
That's what everyone would be waiting years for after, you know, I don't know if we're being worked here by FTR, but famously Young Bucks never asked them to be named and be in the Elite and stuff like that, and that sort of naturally built a rivalry between the two tag teams, as well as obviously the two tag teams being two of the best tag teams in the world. They should have just done that from the start, shouldn't they? Just have FTR come in, beat down the Young Bucks, let the fans pick who's the baby faces, who's the heels, and then go from there.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those instances where actually FTR were handled a lot better, not in WWE generally, but in NXT, because all that their gimmick was we are the best and sometimes we cheat, and we're the best tag team ever. And then face tag teams would go, well, we want to beat you, and then they couldn't, and then sometimes they could, and it was really dramatic. Yeah. But it was just as simple as that. The wrestling really spoke for itself.
I didn't like Cash Wheeler's 450. Though, didn't like that.
Really?
From the match, yeah. Why would he try that when that's not their game? Why would he try
it? Well, that's why they lost. That was his folly.
I know, silly goose. Did he expect it to work, did he? No.
Yeah, he let it, yeah. Maybe he let the occasion get the best of him. I don't know. I like his tweet about it.
Aye.
I've got the best 450 in the business. I'm never going to do it again.
Oh, lovely form. Just why try it? Why try it when it's not your game? Where are we going then? Because this is weird. This is another weird one to put in a tier ranking thing. Currently in All Right, we have Matt Hardy, Christian Cage, and Miro. Is it on that level?
No, I think it's below that level, you know.
And Andrade's level.
Better than Andrade.
Yeah, I'd go like in the mid, like bottom of All Right, just above.
Yeah.
Bottom of All Right, we'll go there. Next up, where are we going now on the old thing? We have John Moxley, all the way back to Double or Nothing 2019.
Ross, it's the best. It's top of top. It's top of top, Ross, but carry on, sorry.
We'll do it. Well, why not? We know what happened, don't we? You attacked Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho after Chris Jericho had beaten Kenny Omega. That's a weird sentence to say here in 2021.
It is.
But
There were rumours in the builder that Moxley would sign for AEW. It wasn't like a total world-breaking surprise, but I think because the show had been so good and so full of variety, and like Cody and Dustin and everything, I think that everyone had kind of forgot that there was one big surprise possibly left. So like Jericho's won, and I just remember you pointed out, but I remember not knowing he was there and hearing like a wave of noise as people slowly realized he was there. I've never experienced a pop like that live. It was really cool.
No, it was good. Like, because we were sort of on it. We were up the tier, up the side of the arena in Las Vegas, and Moxley came out from the entrance that we walked into to get our seats. Just like directly under us. So he came out, and I was like, "It's Ambrose." I didn't know what to say. I had no idea what to say, so I just shouted, "It's Ambrose." And then along he went, and then down he went down into the ring, and he obviously beat down the two lads in the ring and then threw Kenny Omega off a massive novelty pile of chips.
Yeah, it was really good.
It was really
good. I think that it has to be top of... Well, we'll just put it in top for now, but when we come to rank them at the end, it's my favourite so far, I think.
Yeah, big time. But shout out to JR as well, who was actually enthusiastic during his debut. He was like, "Oh, hey! Ah-ha!" Making noises like that. So more of that, please, Jim, from you, sir.
I'd like to compare, just for a second, Moxley's shoulder rolls that he does, which he really emphasised in that little run-in, with the Zack Ryder attempt, or the Matt Cardona attempt from the other day, which was kind of like... It was weird.
Made of jelly.
It was weird, but I liked him doing that as well, to be honest. I liked the crowd getting really angry when he took the mask off.
Oh, it's first-class poo-housery from Matt Cardona, especially.
I think I'd be more excited to see Matt Cardona these days than... No, what am I talking about? No, that's really silly. That's a really silly thing to say.
I was going
to
say, I'm glad you stopped yourself there. Moving on, though, quickly, Eddie Kingston, who answered Cody Rhodes' open challenge for the TNT title on July the 22nd last year. I can't believe it's nearly been a year since that as well.
Wow.
He's having a go at Arn Anderson. He's having a go at Cody Rhodes, because I think around the time Cody Rhodes was telling people about the grind and whatnot and how he was the hardest working, whatever he does, because that's what Cody Rhodes is these days. Mm-hmm. Eddie Kingston was like, "No, I grew up around alcoholics, junkies. I had to survive. I had to grind. He couldn't last a day in his shoes." One hell of a promo from Eddie Kingston. But of course, it was one hell of a promo because it's Eddie Kingston.
I think he's the best promo in the world right now.
Yeah.
I think he's honestly the best promo in wrestling, but this one for me is, I know that we put Ricky Starks in second top tier, but this one for me is top tier because it's like a little bit more of a, like, because Ricky Starks is young and he's on the rise, and it was really nice to see him get given a chance. Whereas for Kingston, it felt like maybe this is like his last big chance. Mm. So the fact that he went out and had a really good match with Cody, was the match part of his debut, or was the debut, was the match after, later on?
Yeah, because he continues in the promo saying he threatens to put Cody in the ground and smile, threatens to kill him, put him in the ground and then smile about it, which is also always good. And then Cody, he says to Cody, you have to accept a no DQ because either Cody is an egg-sucking dog or an egg-sucking bitch.
Oh,
throw it back
really
to Dusty Rhodes, obviously. So yeah, so Cody accepts the no DQ thing and off they went, and they had a match. And obviously, I think I agree with you in putting it in the top tier, just a step above Ricky Starks, is because this debut really did capture the imagination of everyone watching Dynamite, because Higher Eddie was trending, wasn't it, on social media?
Yeah.
And then of course AEW. I don't know. I don't want to say they were forced into doing it, just due to fan pressure, but probably they were.
Yeah, and it was. I remember it got like. Because then Warhorse had a match later on, like a big, like sort of indie sensation wrestler, and everyone was just assuming they would sign him as well, because it just seemed like, but it didn't quite work there, which was a shame for fans of Warhorse. But the Eddie Kingston one was brilliant, because Matthew knows more than I do, but I remember watching Eddie Kingston when I first ever found any indie wrestling, like just on YouTube, and thinking he's brilliant. And then when I actually got into wrestling later on again, and realized, well, he's not really. I can't believe no one's taken advantage of him. So I think there must be a lot of fans of his who've always thought that. And to see him actually get given the chance makes it top tier for me.
And he's knocked it out of the park ever since. There's two promos who don't feel like promos in the world of wrestling. And then one's him and one's Samoa Joe. I can't think of anybody else. Anyone else?
They just feel like that's how they actually are.
Yeah. And finally, our final sort of shocking debut, we're going back to December 2nd, 2020. Winter is coming. Episode of Dynamite, where we have the debut of Sting.
It's Sting!
a massive episode of Dynamite to begin with, because that was the night, of course, where Kenny Omega won the title off Jon Moxley. Mm. But in this segment, we had Team Taz beating down Cody, Dustin, and Darby Allin after Cody and Darby had beaten Hobbs and Starks of Team Taz. Lights go down. Winter starts happening inside the arena with the snow and whatnot. Sting appears on the Tron. Tony Schiavone is losing his bananas on the commentary table. We're back in 1997. Then, of course, we have the moments inside the ring where Sting walks over to Arn. There's history there. He walks over to Cody. That's spine tingling, I tell you, because Cody, obviously, his favourite wrestler when he was young was Sting.
Yeah.
And then Sting walks over to Darby.
Imagine your dad's Dusty Rhodes and your favourite wrestler, Sting. Your dad is also one of the best wrestlers of that period, but you like another one.
Should have paid.
Would it be not cool maybe to like your parent? You want to like one of the other wrestlers, I guess?
I don't think Cody Rhodes cares about not being cool, just watching how his boot these days. And then, of course, we have the moment where Sting walks over to Darby because they both wear face paint.
Mm. But everyone had made that comparison before. Yeah. So it was nice to see that get acknowledged. Because it's one thing, it's always quite nice in wrestling. And in WWE, for me, it only ever happens around WrestleMania or sort of that type of time when they actually will take something that the fans have been suggesting. Like when Zack Ryder and Kurt Hawkins won the tag belts on the pre-show. Or like when Ty Dillinger came out at number 10 in the Royal Rumble. When they take something that fans have made a thing and actually make it a real thing. I quite like that sometimes. And this was one of them. My problem with this is that everything that happened after, because we've talked a lot about Sting coming down. He's one man with a bat, but he's one man, and you've got Cage, Hobbs, and Taz all running away from him. Taz being disgusted by the snow for some reason, going like, "Oh God!"
Yeah.
And I feel like they try to force Tony to shout Sting every week, even though he was just introducing him now. But the debut itself, that was a good moment, I think.
That was top tier straight away for me.
Okay, fair enough.
It was
enough,
the shocking aspect of it as well, because I can't remember reading too much about Sting going to AEW.
Yeah.
At that period, obviously there was links of Sting to AEW because of leaving his Legends contract or whatever with WWE and his like indie like meet and greet appearances, is what I'm trying to say. But there was no, around that time at the start of December, there was no like, "Oh, Sting's going to appear on Dynamite tonight." I can't remember any of that happening. So all in all, I think it was a fantastic debut. So we'll go through the tier just to make sure we're happy.
Oh, one second, sorry. We've missed off the most shocking debut in AEW history ever. At Double or Nothing, we were there for it live, and it's Jack Whitehall. Do you remember when he just turned up? And yeah. We were like, "What's he doing there?"
ITV's partnership with AEW, wasn't it? Which is...
Is he a wrestling fan as well?
I've got no idea. He certainly must be contracted to ITV. That's what I assume from that.
He seemed a bit... Because we're used to seeing Jack Whitehall, all cocky and posh. But he seemed a bit nervous when he was introducing Bret Hart, so I wonder if he is really a wrestling fan.
Is Jack Whitehall much of a name in America?
Nah, not by the reaction in that arena.
No, no one had a clue, did they? But no. Yeah, where would you so put the debut of Jack Whitehall standing there in the ring with the belt?
All right,
fair enough.
Or middle team.
In fact, was Bret Hart a shocking debut from that? Or was he announced before?
Oh, yeah. I don't think he counts, but that was a shocking debut.
We probably missed off about 50,000.
I was as shocked for Jack Whitehall as I was for Bret. It was like two shocks in a row. I couldn't believe it.
I cared a lot more about Bret, I did.
And Bret fell off the stage, which I feel like only me and you saw out of everyone in the arena. That was scary. Yeah, yeah, it was really scary.
Quite a way.
But when we got the tweet saying he was all right, I was like, oh. Because I was worried we'd just seen a man like die or break his legs.
He must have. People at home, he just disappeared out of sight, like face first. It was a whole awful thing to see.
For those who never saw any sort of, you know, as the face and heel tunnels, he didn't quite realise, and he just went through the curtain just at the back, but there was a drop-off, and we just saw him just disappear from view. I remember you going like, oh, Bret's lost, and we looked over, and we're laughing, and then suddenly it turned into like, oh, no.
Oh, scream me, I remember. I was terrified for him, but thankfully he was okay.
I felt weirdly responsible. But, I was like, should we alert someone? Is this, we're the only people who've seen this?
But at least Jack Whitehall was okay. But there we go. We've probably missed off 50,000 debuts from AEW history. Please save your comments of why didn't you do this one. We'll come back and do it in another tier list. That's the beauty of the tier list. It's never ending. It's never going to end. Getting the bin, we have Butcher and the Blade, Paul White, Dark Order and Matt Sydal. I think they're all justified to be in the bin, aren't they?
I think so.
Just about bearable, we have Andrade.
I think that's true as well.
All right, middle of the road, we have Matt Hardy, we have Christian Cage, we have Miro and FTR.
That sounds about right as well, yeah.
Tricky Ricky Starks, Jake Hager, Good Brothers and Proud and Powerful in Lovely, Lovely, Lovely.
Yeah, yeah.
And then finally in the best, we need to rank these. We need to find out.
We're ranking the best of the best.
We need to find out which is the best of the best. So Brody Lee, is Awesome Kong better than Brody Lee's debut?
Just the debut itself, I prefer Awesome Kong's, but obviously Brody Lee was fantastic in his run. So just on debuts alone.
Just debuts alone, innit, yeah.
Just debuts alone, I've got to go for Awesome Kong with the bias that I was there.
Yeah, it was an amazing moment.
It was class.
Shame what came afterwards, but Kenta, was his debut better than Awesome Kong's?
No.
Brian Cage, was his debut better than Awesome Kong's?
Maybe. If there was there wasn't a big live crowd for Brian Cage.
There were a few people there. I don't know what the rules were back then, but
packed out.
It would have been way better if there was a live crowd, I think.
I'd still go with Kong.
Moxley, I'll just shift it now.
Moxley's better than Awesome Kong, yeah.
Kingston over Moxley?
No, but over Awesome Kong, I'd say potentially.
We'll move Eddie Kingston up the second, and then finally. Ding! Over John Moxley. That was Sting, by the way.
Was that? Oh, Sting. No, not over John Moxley.
I find that Tony just loses more enthusiasm week on week on week. Every single time he has to...
It's Sting.
There we have it then. Yeah. John Moxley has the best debut in the history of AEW in the professional opinion of Jack the Jobber of Cultaholic Wrestling. I agree as well, to be fair. So there you go. Tell us how wrong we are in the comments down below. Thank you for watching the latest installment of this tier ranking malarkey. We'll see you in 2 weeks for some more tier ranking stuff. Let me know what you want to see from future tier ranking stuff, because, of course, Cultaholic is here to please the fans and put smiles on people's faces. Any closing remarks?
What a bunch of debuts there, eh?
Aye, cracking.
Great stuff.
We'll see you later.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.